I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome in to Full Draw Friday number 63. I mentioned it on last week's episode. I'm going to be starting. It's probably going to be three parts, I think. We'll see how it flows and what all I get into for part two and part three, and if we need another one, I'll do another one. But right now, planning on probably a three-part Deer Hunting 101 series, and today we're going to be talking about part one, which is what you need. And this is going to be very baseline, very basic stuff to like get started in hunting. We talk all the time about trying to get more people into the sport, so I want to give kind of a resource where people can go, either that are new to the sport, or maybe they know somebody who's trying to get into it. Give them a place to go and hopefully outline all the bare necessities and the stuff that they're going to need to get started at the very least. So that's what we're going to get into today. But before we do, don't forget about our partner on Full Draw Friday, and that is Rodney Hawkins. As you guys know, if you've been listening to the podcast, he is a land specialist with Midwest Farm and Land. He sells hunting farms. He sells different kinds of recreational properties. He sells farmland. He sells residential properties, all that kind of stuff. So if you've got something that you want to sell, or if you're in the market for something, you can get a hold of Rodney. He's also got his own company called RG Outdoors, and he's got a lot of different products there, from Tacticam trail cameras to Radix tree stands, Radix blinds. He's now got these Fission e-bikes. I've got one of those now, and they are sweet. I love the one that I got. You guys can check them out. And he's picking up new stuff all the time too, so you need to check that out. You can find that on his Facebook page, RG Outdoors. And then, of course, you can get a hold of him through there for the Midwest Farm and Land as well. That said, let's get into Deer Hunting 101, Part 1 on Full Draw Friday, number 63. Okay, so first off, if you are listening to this because you're a first-time hunter or you want to get started into it, welcome to the club. It's awesome. It's going to suck sometimes, but it's well worth it. And I can't think of a lot of things I enjoy more than getting out in the woods and hunting white-tailed deer. So I think you're going to love it. Hopefully this helps you get into the sport. But where we need to start on what you need. And I'm not going to get too much into strategy or anything like that on this episode. That's what the following parts will be for. This is just going to be what you need to get started, things that I think are necessities. A few of them are maybe not complete necessities, but definitely something that helps, and some stuff that I wish I would have had when I first started hunting. The very first one, depending on what state you're in, and I'm going to base a lot of this off of Illinois because that's where I'm at, that's what I know. Check in and see if you need to get a hunter safety course taken and get your card that certifies you as completed through the hunter safety course or whatever your state might call it. I know in Illinois that's a requirement. There is a deadline for that on age, I believe, so you can check into that as well. But I'm going to refer you to your Department of Natural Resources, whatever state you're in, their website, and you can find all that information if you need that stuff. I believe you could find courses through there. If not, you can search them online, find a hunter safety course, a hunter education course, they might call it. And you can take that. Usually, at least when I took mine, is a two-day deal. You went in for like a weekend, you took 2 days of classroom stuff, you took a test at the end. It's very basic, just so they have at least a baseline knowledge level for everybody that's going to be hunting. Once you get that, if your state requires it, then you can go buy your hunting license. You don't have to do that in your state either. There's always the option of going out of state. So maybe if you're somewhere where you don't have a lot of deer, or you think you just want to go try somewhere else, I mean, I would recommend if you do have a deer population or a herd where you're at, trying that first. It's going to be significantly cheaper, and you can get into a lot of hurdles you have to clear in certain states depending on where you want to go. In Illinois, I know for sure you can just buy over-the-counter. I believe Missouri's the same way, but it's incredibly expensive compared to what it is if you're a resident, and that's the way for a lot of different states. So once you have your hunter safety course, you can get your hunting license in your state. It's not going to be incredibly expensive if you're a resident. Once you get your hunting license, I know in Illinois you also have to have a habitat stamp in order to hunt deer. So make sure you've got all that stuff taken care of. When you go, like, you can buy them at a Walmart or your local sporting goods store, somewhere that sells them. Just tell them if you don't know exactly what you need, tell them what you're going to do, and they should be able to tell you everything that you're going to need to purchase. And they're not going to try to sell you on anything either, because they're not making a ton of money off that. So it's not like if they sell you four stamps that you don't need, they're making more money off of it. They should be pretty helpful with it, especially if you go into like a pro shop or something. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. But they should be really helpful in getting you pointed in the right direction and tell you everything you need on your hunting license. Once you get that, that's when you get into your permits. Now, there are states, again, that do it differently, but at least for Illinois, and I think probably a majority, you have your hunting license and then your permits are separate. In Illinois, you can buy an antlerless only statewide bow permit, or you can buy an either sex combo permit, which gives you one tag that you can use on a doe or an antlered deer, so antlerless or antlered. And that becomes important because sometimes you run into does that have antlers, so it's not a doe tag, it's an antlerless tag. Sometimes late season you might shoot a buck that doesn't have antlers. You can use your antlerless tag for that. In Illinois, I believe the restriction is 3 inches on the antlers, so if it has less than 3 inches of antlers on its head, if it's a button buck or a spike, you can also use your antlerless tag on that. But if it's anything bigger than that, you have to use your antler tag, which is that either sex tag, and they will also give you an additional antlerless tag with that if you buy it over the counter. There are obviously landowner permits too. You have to, I believe, apply for those every year. I'm not 100% familiar with that, but again, and from state to state, that's going to vary. In Illinois, if you're wanting to firearm hunt, there is usually a day in October where you can go buy your tags over the counter, but if you're in one of the more popular counties, you'd better get there early, and sometimes there won't be any left over anyway. So that's just everything that's left over from their draw system, their application system that you do earlier in the year. So if you're wanting to firearm hunt, especially in Illinois, it's very likely it's too late at this point for you to get that done, unless maybe you got landowner tags or something. But for next year, just know that you can apply for those out of season early. I don't know when the dates are exactly for that, but it's something, again, you can find on the DNR website. And depending on what state you're in, that's going to change as well. But for archery tags, at least in Illinois, you can buy a statewide tag, which means you can hunt in any county with this archery tag. You can get antlerless only, or you can get an either sex combo, so an antlered deer or an antlerless, and then another antlerless with that. You can shoot as many as 2 bucks in Illinois, so you can buy 2 of those tags at one time if you think there's a chance that you might shoot 2 bucks in the same sitting. But that's, you can get kind of deep on all the different rules when it comes to permits and stuff like that. So I just wanted to make sure we hit that marker, make sure you got your permits or whatever's required for your state for their tagging system. Some states you don't have to have the physical permit on you. Some states I don't even think you have to buy a physical permit. You can do it online. You can have it on your phone. You check them in that way. So if that's the state that you're in and you can do that, absolutely by all means go do that. So now that you've got your hunter safety course, you've got your hunting license and you've got your permits, that's great. But what are you going to do at this point, other than maybe jump out behind a bush and try to scare the deer to death, right? You need a weapon of some sort. Preferably not your vehicle. Preferably not like a baseball bat. So what you're looking at, if you're firearm hunting, obviously you have some kind of firearm. And there are restrictions on that. In Illinois, it has to be a straight wall cartridge rifle. And I believe it has to be single shot or has to be modified to that. Same way with the pistols, they have to be modified to a single shot. If it's on like an AR platform, slugged shotguns, slug barrel shotguns, rifled, not rifled, whatever it is, slug guns are illegal in Illinois. Muzzle loaders, that's going to be, again, dependent on your state completely, because some states you can use center fire rifles, some states you can't. They have black powder seasons, and there are a lot of different seasons, dates, and stuff for firearms. So if you're getting into that, make sure you check in all that stuff, but you're going to have some kind of firearm if that's the way you want to hunt. If that's not how you want to hunt, And a lot of times it's going to give you more time of year to hunt if you go to archery equipment. There are different levels to that as well. If you want to be Fred Bear, you can go buy a traditional bow and get you some feathers off a turkey or something and put it on a wooden arrow shaft and knock yourself out. If you want it to be a little bit easier, you can go get yourself a compound bow, and they make a lot of them at very reasonable prices, so you don't have to break the bank on that to get started. Now, do realize that it's going to cost some money. You can go buy a cheapo bow at Walmart or like a some kind of sporting goods store. Again, if you're not sure if you're going to like it, if you're not sure you're going to even want to do it again next year, you can get proficient enough with one of those to hunt and to see if you're going to like it or not. It's just not going to be as tunable. It's not going to be as accurate as consistently as a better bow would be. And you can still get into one of those for a reasonable price. And then, I mean, you could even look at used bows, and you can find those at your local pro shop as well. Another option, obviously, depending on the state you're in Illinois, it's legal for anybody throughout the entire archery season now to use crossbows. And if it's somebody, if you're out there and this is your very first year hunting and you're just getting into it, a crossbow is a great introductory weapon. If you have physical limitations, obviously that's going to play a part in it as well. If you can't draw back the amount of poundage that you need to on a vertical bow, there are requirements for that, minimum draw weights that you have to meet to be able to hunt with those bows. So keep that in mind. If there's limitations on that for you physically, crossbow might be the way you have to go. But it is an option, and I wouldn't say I encourage it if you don't need it, but if it's what's going to get you in the woods for the first time, then by all means, you can find crossbows at extremely affordable prices for what they are. If you take compared to a vertical bow, the same price range, you're getting more bang for your buck, more bow out of a crossbow at lower price points than you are your vertical bow. But it's not completely a different sport, but it definitely changes the game. It's more similar to a firearm in the way it's set up. It's got a trigger pull on it. You got a scope on them, that sort of thing. You have less movement that you have to make. It's a little bit bulkier. It's not as easy to carry out into the woods and all that stuff. But there's definitely pros and cons to both of them. I'm not going to get into the crossbow versus vertical bow argument on this podcast because that's not why you're here. I've talked about that on other podcasts in the past. So if you want to listen to me rant, ramble, whatever on that, you can go find those. But those are your options. And if you're going to go with archery equipment, which I would recommend for anybody, can you get a taste for hunting using a firearm? Yes. Can you get hooked on it using a firearm? For sure. But archery hunting is such a different experience. Even if you are going with a crossbow, you have to be closer to the game. You're going to make more mistakes naturally. It's just a whole different world, and I think it's way more addictive once you get started on it. I think people grow a deeper passion for archery hunting than they do firearm hunting for that reason. So I would recommend trying archery no matter what. Even if you are going to still firearm hunt and this is your first year doing it, I would at least recommend getting a bow and going out and shooting it. If you're going to do that, go to a local pro shop. Don't go in on your own unless you have, maybe it's a buddy, a family member or something that can help you with your bow, go to a pro shop. Even then, you can still go to a pro shop because who knows, your buddy might be blowing smoke at you telling you that he's some kind of bow mechanic and the best wrench around and he has no idea what he's talking about. So I always would recommend a pro shop for that. I think it can be hard to find good ones these days because they seem to be few and far between, but if you've got a good one in your area, even if you have to travel a little bit, it's going to be worth it, if nothing else, for the first time. Because they're going to have so much information. It's such a valuable resource if you can find someone in a pro shop that's going to be able to help you get into the right bow for you and get it set up for you. So that's a big thing. You can go buy one of those cheapo compound bows off the shelf at Walmart or that's hanging in a sporting goods store, or you could even spend a little bit more money in some of those sporting goods stores and buy one that's just hanging off the wall. But you still have to get that thing tuned and shooting right, not only to be consistent and to be able to be confident in it, but also to be fair to the game. The last thing you want to do is wound an animal because you weren't prepared and you didn't have everything set up the way it should be. It's likely going to happen at some point anyway. It's happened to pretty much everybody that's bow hunted for a long enough amount of time. If they tell you it hasn't, they either haven't bow hunted that much, they haven't shot that many animals, or they're lying. So The last thing you want to do is have that happen because of something that you could have controlled. That's where the pro shop really comes in handy on the tuning side and getting you set up, because that is can be a daunting task. I just fought with a little bit on my bow. I talked about that, I think, on the last Full Draw Friday. So just be forewarned that if you're going to try to tackle that by yourself, there's plenty of YouTube videos to get you through it, but you're going to need some patience. If you go to a pro shop, any questions you got, they're going to be able to answer them. They know what they're talking about. And not only that, on the setting up and things of that nature, they're also going to be able to get you all the necessary equipment that you need for your bow.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
There's a ton of, like, ready to hunt, whatever they call them. There's all kinds of different little phrases they use for them, but basically you can buy a bow package that'll have a sight, a rest, and maybe a quiver on it, and it might have a D-loop already tied on it, and maybe it's got a peep sight with it or something. All that kind of stuff, you can find a package deal and get all that on the bow. If you go into the pro shop, they can set you up with that, and then they can also get everything aligned that's going to fit you right. That way it does fit you correctly. They can also help you with something else that can be extremely daunting, extremely intimidating if you're new to it, and that's finding the right arrows and the right broadheads and the right fletchings and all of that stuff. If you're just getting started, you don't have to buy the latest and greatest everything, and that goes for the bow, that goes for the sights, that goes for the rest, anything like that, the releases. But you still need something that's going to work. You need something that's going to be effective. You need something that you can use confidently. So the guys at the pro shop are going to be able to help you find that happy place between the cheapest piece of junk that you could find and something that's incredibly expensive that, like, pro guys are shooting. And that goes for arrows and broadheads as well. Again, just like the bows and crossbows, I'm not going to get into the broadhead argument on this podcast. We've talked about it before. There's pros and cons to a fixed blade. There's pros and cons to a mechanical. There's different scenarios where I think each has their benefits over the other one. But the guys at your pro shop are going to know what's going to work best for you based on the poundage that you're drawing, based on your draw length, the shots that you're going to be taking, all of that kind of stuff. They can take into consideration and make a recommendation for you, and then you can ultimately make the final decision. But I would definitely lean on their expertise when it comes to that kind of stuff. It's just going to make your life so much easier because you can spend so much time and money on equipment, and then if you don't know how to use it or you got something wrong, it's going to be a big pain, and you're going to have to go through all of it again. So if you can knock that stuff out in the beginning, it's going to save a lot of time and money. A release is another one that they're going to be able to help you with, what kind of release you want to get. Most likely, if it's your first time, they're probably going to recommend you an index release just because it's a lot easier to use. It eliminates a lot of operator error. You can control it a little bit better than a back tension release or something like that. So keep that in mind as well, and I'm going to get into that a little bit as we get down here on this list that I got. But that should get you set up on the archery side of things. Go to a good pro shop, and they're really going to help you out. Another thing you want to get when it comes to your archery equipment is a good target, and make sure you get one that can take broadheads and field points. It's okay to have one that just takes field points if you don't plan on hunting yet, you're just getting used to your bow, and you can shoot that thing all day long with field points into it, and the target's going to last for a long time. But if you're going to hunt, you need to practice with your broadheads, whatever ones you're shooting, whether that be a practice broadhead that they put in the package or your real broadheads. I would recommend shooting at least one of your real broadheads just to make sure it flies like the practice heads, because sometimes they don't. If you're going to do that, you need to have a target that can accept the broadheads and the field points. So keep that in mind. You got to have one of those because you got to practice. You can't go, even if you go to the pro shop, you can't go in there and fling 10 or 15 arrows and get things set up and then think you're ready to go to the woods. You need to practice with that bow. You need to get familiar with it, comfortable with it. That way you don't have to think about it when a deer's coming in and you're trying to kill it. It's a big thing to take an animal's life, especially at that close of range. It can be very stressful, especially the first time. The last thing you want in that situation is to be fumbling around with your bow because you're not that comfortable with it. You need that to be as close to second nature as you can get for your experience level. So we got you all set up on on any kind of equipment that you need as far as your weapon goes and your practice and that. The next thing I recommend is getting the proper clothes. And that doesn't necessarily mean the most expensive clothes or the latest and greatest camo pattern. That just means preferably something in camouflage, because while you can absolutely kill deer out there in blue jeans and a red flannel shirt, you're not going to be able to get away with as much as you would with camouflage. There's a reason people make it. There's a reason people have been using it for years. It is effective. I don't care what anybody says. I'm not saying, again, that you can't go in there without camo and kill a deer, but it's definitely going to benefit you to have some camouflage. And the pattern doesn't necessarily matter as much. Get something that you think looks good. Maybe ask a friend or go on, I don't know if I'd go on social media or not. There's a lot of people that are going to tell you some camo sucks and some camo's great. So make your own decision on the camo. If you want it to match, if you don't want it to match, whatever. I would just recommend some camouflage on whatever clothing you're going to get. More importantly than the type of camo is that you have the right clothes that fit well. You don't want clothes that are too big hanging off, especially if you're archery hunting, something for your string to catch on. You don't want stuff that's too tight, because then you can't draw your bow, you can't move around, you can't climb up in a tree stand, that kind of stuff. What I do and what I would recommend is to get some kind of system going with your clothing, and by that I mean layers. Get yourself a good base layer on top and bottom. Get yourself some good wool socks that are moisture wicking. The little battery-powered electric socks, the heated ones are amazing. I've got some of those. I use them in the late season. They are awesome. If you want to go that route, you can go that route for your socks and use those when it gets cold. But base layers for sure. Get you a lighter layer to go on top of that for early season or for some of those warmer days throughout November and December. And then get you an outer layer on top of that. So that's your bibs, maybe heavy insulated pants, a bigger jacket, heavier insulated jacket. Somewhere in between there for the top is usually good too. If you're like me, my legs don't necessarily get that cold, so I can go in, even if it's like, let's say, 35 degree day, I can go in with the same pants and a base layer that I would use maybe in the early season. I might not use the base layer, but I throw on a base layer under the same pants that I use for the early season and be fine. But up top, I might get a jacket that's in between something that's going to be for 0 degrees and just a long sleeve shirt. So you might add an extra layer in there on the top. But make sure you've got at least 3 layers, I would say, of your clothing. Gloves are a big one too. Find something that's comfortable. Find something that has good dexterity. Something you can shoot your bow with, and make sure you practice shooting your bow with gloves. Could be just brown jersey gloves if that's what you need. If you're like me, again, and your hands get cold, because the thing that always gets me is my hands and my feet. The electric socks have really helped me with part of that. But my hands, they'll sweat walking in or something, and then they freeze. So what I've found that's been most effective for me on gloves is the mittens that you can fold the top back and then have open fingers. That's been the best of both worlds for me, because I can dry my fingers out so they're not sweating too bad. And then when it gets too cold, I can fold that flap up over them and be fine. A lot of times I won't wear a glove on my right hand. I use a hand warmer, which is something that, again, not a necessity, but it is nice to have. So if you've got a hand warmer you can wear around your waist, think of it like a hoodie pocket that's insulated. I'll put my right hand, which is my shooting hand, I'll put that in there, and then that way I can have it. I can be holding the bow and have it in there if I need to, or like if I'm running a camera, of course, I have to have it out, and I might wear a glove in that case, but especially if I got a cameraman with me. And if you're not filming, you don't have to worry about that. I'll just keep my hand in that hand warmer, and then I can hold the cold bow with the gloved hand in my left hand, and then when I'm ready to draw and shoot, I just pull my shooting hand out of that pocket and go from there. And it helps a lot with feel on the release and things like that. But good gloves are very important. Get you a good sock hat. And if you want an insulated face mask, that's a good way to go too. If your face generally gets cold, sock hat's a big one. It's going to keep a lot of heat in for you, just like any other hat you would wear in the cold. Doesn't have to be camo either, but if you want one to match all your camo, that's great. Lastly, on the clothing thing, I will say a good pair of boots is worth its weight in gold. And that could be lace-up boots that are insulated. That could be rubber boots. I will say for later in the year, if you're walking in any distance, if you're just going rubber boots and wool socks, you do run the risk of your feet sweating in those. And then even if you got moisture wicking socks, it's still only going to do so much. And then once your feet sweat and they get wet, now you're sitting up there about an hour in when you start to cool off. you're going to freeze in those rubber boots. I've done pretty well with those electric socks inside the rubber boots. When my feet get cold, I just turn those on. When they get warmed up, I turn them off, saves the battery, and it works well for me. But I also really love my lace-up boots that have the insulation. Keeps me from having to wear as big of socks, and my feet don't sweat going in, and then they're just warmer in general. So a good pair of boots I would highly recommend getting if you're going to be hunting in any kind of cold. If you're just going early season or you're just going to be fair weather, which is fine, you don't necessarily need the boots. You just get you some rubber boots. One thing about those, it's going to contain your scent a little bit better. Nothing's going to beat rubber boots when it comes to that. Or, heck, wear your work boots if you need to, if that's what you got, to get started. The next thing, stands. You don't necessarily need a tree stand to start with. If you don't want to spend the money, if you're not comfortable being up in the tree, you absolutely don't have to do that. Don't think you have to just because you see it on TV all the time. Blinds is the same way. Elevated blinds can be expensive. If you don't know if you're going to like hunting or not for sure, why would you spend that much money on it? You can find decently cheap ground blinds. I would say if you're going to be bow hunting out of them, make sure they have enough room for you to draw your bow. There's some little doghouse blinds that would be extremely hard to bow hunt out of. I've tried before in my younger days, and it didn't work out very well. So if you are going to go with a ground blind, make sure you get one that has enough room. But you can find some of those pretty reasonably priced. But you don't need that either. If you want to just go sit on the ground, get you a bucket or a milk crate or a stool. You can buy a decent stool for a cheap enough price, and you can just sit out on the ground and get you some cover. I'll talk a little bit more about that on the coming episodes, but definitely if you're going to sit on the ground, I'd recommend a face mask or a neck gaiter that you can pull up over your face. It's going to help hide you a little bit better when you're at eye level with a deer. Same thing when you're at a blind. I like to, a lot of times if I'm in a ground blind, wear some kind of face mask or something just to break that up. As far as stands go, if you do want to go that route, there's a lot of different options. There's hang-on stands, which it's just a stand by itself, and what you got to get some sticks, climbing sticks or screw-in steps to get up into the tree, and you strap those on as you go up, and then the hang-on stand is just what it sounds like. It hangs on the tree with a strap that comes with the stand. I always throw an extra ratchet strap around them, at least one. I don't trust the strap that comes with the stand ever by itself. You want to make sure I would recommend getting an extra ratchet strap at least and throwing around that thing. That is a little bit more uncomfortable if you're not used to it because you're just hanging on that tree by some straps, and it could be an uneasy feeling. And also, just in general, if you don't have some of the cheaper hang-ons are not all that comfortable to sit in. So if you want to be a little more comfortable, you're going to have to spend some more money for those. Same way with the ladder stands. And that's what, if you're going to spend the money and get into stands, I would recommend ladder stands to start with. They're going to be harder to get put up. They're going to be harder to set up. You might have to take somebody out there with you. Obviously, you have to put them together, so there's that added in there as well. But if you want to be up off the ground and you're not comfortable in a hang-on stand or a climbing stand, which is, that's just what it sounds like too. It's a stand that you get in and you climb up the tree with it. There's a learning curve to those as well. If you're not wanting to go with one of those, definitely I would recommend a ladder stand. It's easy. It's got a ladder that goes right up to the platform of the stand. It's all one piece, and then you lean it up against the tree, and it's just like climbing your extension ladder at your house, and you get up in the tree and sit in it. You strap it to the tree, and you sit in the stand, and you're good to go. And some of those can be extremely comfortable, again, depending on the price range that you're looking at. But again, don't feel like you have to have a stand to get started. If you are, though, make sure you've got a safety harness, and they come with most stands that you're going to buy. They're easy to find at any of the stores, Walmart, sporting goods stores, whatever it is. Get you a good safety harness. Get a rope for a tree rope to go with it, or a tree strap, whatever you got that goes around the tree once you get up there. And also, either get a lineman's rope to go with that so that you can throw it around the tree as you're climbing it, especially if you're going to hang on or a climber. That's a good way to go. One good thing about a lineman rope, if you're hanging your stand as you go, or you're putting your sticks up, I mean, you have to put those up as you go. It gives you both hands. You can throw that thing around the tree and lean back, and you got both hands to work with. So if you're going hang on, I would definitely recommend a lineman's rope. And then another option, if you're not going with those, even if you are, you can add this as well. It's the lifeline ropes that they make. It's basically the same rope that your lineman's rope is going to be made out of, or your tree rope, but it's usually they make them 30 foot long, so you go up to the top Once you get your stand set, you tie it around the top of the tree, you run it down to the bottom, you tie it around the bottom of the tree, and then it's got a little place that you can hook in your D-ring to on your harness, and then you just slide that up the tree as you go, and you're always connected to the tree. That's important because a lot of accidents happen every year with people not wearing harnesses, and a lot of them happen before they even get into the stand. They either fall off the ladder, maybe a strap breaks, maybe the stick falls out from under them, maybe they lose their footing, or you step into the stand. Maybe your straps weren't secured like you thought they were, or a number of different things could happen to them. Maybe something chewed through your straps. You step off into the stand, and a lot of people fall that way too. So always make sure you're connected to the tree at all times if you're going to be in a stand. Now we'll get into kind of more of the stuff that I would call necessity, but it's definitely not something you absolutely have to have. If you get the stuff that we've talked about to this point, you can absolutely go hunting, be successful. It's just going to be, this is stuff that's going to make life a lot easier. And some of the stuff I didn't have when I first started and I wish I would have. And one of those that would have helped me a lot when it came to missing deer is a rangefinder. And that just helps with judging distance. There are some different things you can do if you don't want to spend the money on a rangefinder. You can get a decent one at a decent price these days. They're not incredibly expensive. Obviously, we're talking about all this stuff. You're getting into some price anyway. So, I mean, what's another $60 to make sure you've spent all this money and time already to make sure that you know how far you're shooting? If you don't want to do that, though, you can absolutely go step everything off. You're leaving more scent around your stand that you maybe necessarily don't want to do if you're doing it when you're going in there to hunt. But you can go in early when you cut your shooting lanes or whatever, or the spot that you're going to be sitting. Even take a can of spray paint as long as it's legal. I can't think of anywhere that it is illegal, but I'm just throw that caveat in there. It might be for some reason somewhere, but you can step off certain distances and then mark those in paint. So if you got like purple paint for 20 yards, you walk out to 20 yard radius around your stand and you throw a purple strip on a tree or in the grass or something, that can be a way to go, give you kind of a guide. Also, once you've been doing it long enough, you'll start to get a pretty good idea of how far things are. And you can just kind of judge them in the field. But again, it's a very stressful situation, especially for the first time when you got that animal coming in that you're planning on shooting. So you might forget that. You may not even look at the stripes on the ground or on the trees that you painted. If you've got a rangefinder, you can range the animal as it's coming in. But what I always try to do is range spots. And every time I get to a stand, even a stand that I've been in over and over and over, I will range the spots just to reaffirm with myself what's what and how far things are. And then at the very least, if you forget or you don't have time to range the animal where it stands, you have landmarks and you can make your decision based off of that. So rangefinder is a big one for me. If you can afford the extra expense, definitely go for one of those. Another one in that same category would be binoculars. They're going to help you out a lot determining what you're looking at certain distances. Even if it's 50, 60 yards, doesn't seem that far. If it's through the trees, through the limbs and whatnot, through some brush, those binoculars are going to make a world of difference on finding out what you're looking at. It's also fun to be able to sit there, and if you're sitting on an open field or something, you can kind of get a better look at the deer that are coming out. Maybe they're coming out on the other side or something, and you can see whether it's bucks or does or how big they are, and you can just kind of watch them and feel a little bit closer to them even if you're not. So binoculars are a big one. I always have mine on me when I go out to the stand. If you're looking to kill a buck, if that's your goal, one big one that I definitely would recommend, a bare minimum call, would be a grunt tube. You can pick one up real cheap. It doesn't have to sound amazing as long as it makes the right noise. Watch some videos on deer grunting and try to mimic that, and you'll be just fine. There's a lot of nuance to that and a lot of different situations for calling. We could do a whole podcast on it, so I'm not going to get deep into the weeds on that, but I would definitely get a grunt tube if you're thinking about wanting to kill a buck. There's just so many scenarios where he might be just a little bit out of range. You pull that grunt tube out and you give him a couple grunts, especially the right time of year, end of October all the way through November, he might come charging on in, even late season sometimes, even early season. I mean, a grunt call can be effective all year long, but especially in the last week and a half of October into the middle of November, it can be extremely effective way to get that deer into bow range. Another one is a bow hanger. If you're going to be hunting a stand, definitely recommend getting yourself a good bow hanger. Realtree makes something they call an easy hanger. There's a lot of different. HME has some. It's just a screw-in system that folds out so you can hang your bow on it, and that way you don't have to hold it the whole time. Absolutely don't have to have one. I never used one really with my climbing stand. I would always just lay the bow across the front of the climber, but if you don't have a rail or something and you don't want the bow sitting in your lap the whole time, which is, I mean, it's not a bad thing, but it can be kind of a pain in the butt to sit there and have to worry about holding that unless, you know, you don't really want to drop that either. So you spend all that money on it all that time, you drop it, and then you can't shoot it because you don't know what happened to your sight. Maybe the thing blows up. So a bow hanger is a big one for me just to make life easier if you're going to be in a tree stand. I talked about a little bit earlier the release aids and things like that. I would definitely throw in an extra release. So whichever one you got, buy two of them. And then keep one with your hunting stuff at all times, because we've all done it before. We've forgotten our release when we head out to the stand. If you don't have someone to bring you one, it's good to have a spare. And that goes for ammo too. You can always keep extra ammo with you or with your hunting stuff. That way you have it. A headlamp is a big one for me. So you need a way to find your way in, find your way out. Some guys don't like to use headlights or flashlights at all if they're entering or exiting in the dark, which is fine if you really know your spot and you really know where you're going. If there's no chance of any other hunters being around, if you're hunting public ground or hunting a property where you might be going past where another person might be hunting, absolutely take a flashlight. Forget worrying about scaring the deer. I'm not saying wave it around like you're landing airplanes, but make sure you got a headlight on. There's been multiple scenarios where people have been shot by other hunters that thought they were deer. Deer and people can do a lot of things similar. They can sound similar, even right at dusk. They could kind of look similar coming through the trees, coming through the woods. Deer don't have flashlights. So if you got a flashlight, if nothing else, it can be a good safety measure. So I like to keep a headlamp in with my stuff at all times. A good knife is a big one. This is going to go into, you know, a lot of different uses. If you just need to cut something out in the field, if you need to open something, even if you don't have a tree saw or something, you need to cut a little limb, you can do that with a knife. It's going to dull the crap out of it, but you can get it done. And then, of course, if you are lucky enough to shoot something, you're going to have to field dress that thing. So get you a knife that you can do that with. There's tons of videos on how to field dress deer. And then along with that, I'd also go with some field dress gloves. If you just don't want to touch everything in there with your bare hands. Number two, if you got your hunting clothes on, you don't want to get them all dirty, which is where more where I keep them on with my stuff for, is just because if I'm wearing long sleeves in my hunting clothes, I'll throw those on. They go up to basically your bicep or even farther, maybe up to your shoulder, some of them. And it's just going to keep things clean so you can get in there with your hunting gear on. You don't have to worry about taking it off and get that thing field dressed. And of course, the last thing I have on my list, you got all this stuff, you're going to need somewhere to keep it, so get yourself a good backpack. And it doesn't have to be real expensive. They make some decent-sized, cheaper packs, and you're going to be able to get most of the stuff that I mentioned into that. All this stuff, that extra release, your headlamp, keep it in that backpack, and every time you go out to the field, you take that pack. If you forget something, you got an extra in there. And if you don't ever take it out of the pack and leave it out of it, it's always going to be in there, and you're always going to have the stuff you need. Inevitably, you will forget something. I promise. It'll happen. And you might not have an extra in your pack. But be a little prepared. At the baseline, have an extra release in there. If you're not going to have two of anything else, have two releases, because that could be heartbreaking once you walk into the stand. You're usually not going to know it until you get there and you're ready to put your release on. So keep that in that backpack. That's all I got for what you need. Deer Hunting 101 Part 1. Hopefully that helps you guys out. If there's anything I missed and you're listening to this and you're already a hunter and there's something that just glaringly obvious that I missed, which is very possible, leave it in the comments. Let us know. Help everybody out. If you do hunt, absolutely feel free to leave some advice or anything like that in the comments as well for any of the newcomers that might be listening to this. Again, it's going to try to be probably a three-part series at a minimum. And then after that, for everybody that already does hunt, and is into it, we'll start getting more into the weeds on the strategy stuff. And then at that point, after we do, you know, three or four episodes like this, hopefully some of you people that are in it for the first time will be more interested in that strategy stuff, and you can follow along with that as well. So that's what the plan looks like moving forward. I appreciate you guys tuning in to this week's episode. Again, if you're starting out hunting for the first time, I'm happy to have you as part of the community. Good, best of luck to you. Hope you can get it done. And at the very least, I hope you have fun doing it. So thanks for tuning in. Go enjoy your weekend. Remember, stay safe, shoot straight, everybody.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's,